out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 28th of June, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting live at radioarian.com. As it's Thursday, we have the man behind the Orthodox Nationalist with us, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. Matt, how are you doing today?
Not too bad. I want to publicly thank you for the work you've done. My website crashed, whatever happened to it. You worked your butt off getting the backup page up. And that's that. You didn't have to do that. That was amazing of you. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. That should all be up and running now. All your essays are hosted there, so the links on the index page should work. They've got all the titles for the essays. Plus, you've also got the back catalogue of the Orthodox Nationalists, the first series, which was at Voice of Reason. That's all available there as well. And the Rush Journal link is pointing to that. And, of course, there's also the links so that people can donate to you. I know it's important to you. Well, very important to you, because that's your only source of income, is people sending in donations to you. So, you know, it has to be available that people can send funds to cover your research. I mean, it's important. It's important work that you are doing, Matt. And it's important you do have a website up. So just to tell people where that is again, rushjournal.org, that is pointing to it. And you can also find it at theorthodoxnationalist.wordpress.com. And moving into the subject for today, it's not something I really know that much about, so I'm hoping you're going to help me out here, Matt. And that's American warmongering in the South China Seas. And I've got a quote here to begin with. China will not give up any inch of territory in the Pacific Ocean, President Xi Jinping told US Defense Secretary James Mattis Wednesday during a visit to Beijing. Our stance is steadfast and clear-cut when it comes to China's sovereignty and territorial integrity, Xi said, according to state media, adding that any inch of territory passed down from ancestors cannot be lost while we want nothing from others. Mattis's meeting with Xi inside the Great Hall of the People comes as relations between Washington and Beijing have been marred recently by rising tensions, not only by an impending trade war, but also by both militaries viewing each other with increasing suspicion and alarm. So, what is going on here then, Matt? I do like the fact that the Chinese guys talking about sovereignty and territory passed down from ancestors. That's a very nationalistic way to look at it. But what else is going on here? What is this? What's the fuss about? Why are America getting involved? And why are China so annoyed about it?
You know, China is in the Pacific what Japan was in the 1930s. There is a lot of anti-Chinese sentiment in countries south of them, in Indonesia, the Philippines, et cetera. But they're in a position to really push the U.S. out. Now, it just so happens that if you look on a map and you go from every place from Shanghai down to the Philippine Islands and off to the west, maybe about 1,000 miles, maybe 500 miles, there are estimated untapped oil deposits worth trillions of dollars. So, and that's just what we know now. So the U.S. oil industry is going nuts, making sure that the U.S. controls this area, and they'll go to war to make sure that's the case. But just as importantly as that, the U.S. wants this trade, free trade in that area, which, of course, so much trade goes through that part of the world, not only open but controlled by the U.S. So while China is like Japan in the 1930s, the U.S. is like Britain in the 19th century. But China, and I'm convinced that the spokesman from China actually put it that way on purpose. He put it that way to confront the cosmopolitan liberal American way of viewing things, passed down from our ancestors. He's making a point there. China, you know, Willis Carter always used to say that China is a national socialist state in its Chinese version. So much of their policy fits that. And sovereignty and their influence in the area and their tremendous success is a great point of pride for the Han majority in that country. And of course, the U.S. has no right to be there. And this is purely an imperial gambit. China's their own backyard. So it will be like, you know, China in the Gulf of Mexico telling the Americans what to do. And so so there is a certain arrogance there. Admiral Harris and, of course, General Mattis are jingoists. They're military men. They're kind of dumb guys, like dumb jocks. You know, they have that kind of mentality. And they love, you know, the only thing they really understand is physical force and violence. And but oil and trade and is really the main. Now, as Admiral Harris, who was a commander of the U.S. Navy in the area, said clearly that this is a conflict of ideologies. He said the exact quote is something along the lines of, this is a conflict of repressive versus free systems. Is what he said. So this is not just, you know, this is something along the exact quote is this: a geopolitical competition between free and repressive visions of the world order is taking place in the Indo-Pacific, Harris said. Now that's really a declaration of war to a great extent. This is a black and white issue that if the Chinese win this, the world will be plunged into darkness. So this is about money. This is about jingoism. This is about the imperial state. And as I've said many times, the U.S. is badly wounded and bleeding. And when you have a wounded animal and you back it into a corner, it becomes very, very, very unpredictable. And the U.S. is going to start lashing out like this. And really, the Chinese are the moderate ones in this situation.
So we've got oil there, basically. Where is this oil? Is it just spread out all across the ocean seabed? Is it in? I mean, how do they say who owns the oil that's in the sea? I mean, we've got oil in the North Sea that's supposedly owned by Scotland. So they've got oil here, but surely it must be within somebody's territory. Is that within China's territory? Is it international? Is it not claimed by anybody? It must belong to somebody, if you know what I mean.
Well, the two centers are the Paracel Islands and the Spratly Islands. You start at the southern tip of Taiwan and go all the way over to the west to Shanghai, and then go all the way south to the bottom of the Philippines, and about 500 miles to the west, you know, near Vietnam. And it's all offshore. It's and some, we're talking about, you know, trillions of dollars, just on a very low estimate of what's there. And I don't know, not much of it is being pumped yet. So this is what the fight is about. You have five countries claiming these little islands and these territories. And China has sent bombers there and everything else. And it really, you know, it's their territory. But Malaysia claims it. The Philippines claim it. And I think the U.S. largely is, even Vietnam claims one of them. The U.S. is provoking the smaller countries into making claims that they probably wouldn't have made before for the sake of making it seem like there's this coalition against the Chinese. So with the Spratly Paracel Islands to the north, the Spratly Islands to the south, and everything around there, you have an offshore gold mine beyond belief.
Right. Well, that explains why President Duterte has got involved in this. And I would have thought Duterte would have been more likely to come down on the side of China against America. I didn't think he was too pleased with America. But Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte has said China will be crossing a red line if it unilaterally mines the natural resources of the South China Sea, according to the country's foreign minister, Alan Peter Cayetano. In a speech during a flag-raising celebration at the Department of Foreign Affairs, Cayetano defended the Philippine government from allegations they were taking a soft policy on Chinese militarization of the South China Sea. Beijing said some red lines. We said some red lines. The president has already said that. If anyone gets the natural resources in the Western Philippine Sea, South China Sea, he will go to war. He said, whatever happens, happens. He will go to war, Cayetano said. So that's some pretty strong language there from Duterte. He's saying he's going to go to war if China starts trying to get any of the natural resources out. And he's talking about the Western Philippine Sea. He's not talking about the South China Sea. So what's happening there with the Philippines, Matt?
Well, there's a few options. The first option is that because Duterte, you know, won his drug war in a couple of months, the U.S. condemned him to the skies, and I guess still is to some extent. They may be offering him a deal if they assist the U.S. in a war there, or at least in threats there, that they'll leave him alone. The other option is that there's a very anti-Chinese feeling in the Philippines and Indonesia, because the Chinese usually are they're a small minority and they're usually very well off. They're the merchant class of the area, and they're always very unpopular. The third option is that this is bluster. We know that if it ever came to a conflict, the Chinese, who are aligned with Duterte most of the time, will cut him in. You know, this is really, and that's my opinion, that this is, you know, the Chinese will work with him. Certainly anything close to the Philippines, they're certainly happy to negotiate with him, and he's well aware of that. The RIMPAC exercise, which is I think the largest naval exercise in the world, China was just disinvited to it. I don't know when that takes place. I guess on the 23rd of May, they were sent the letter. It's really kind of odd how a clear enemy of the U.S. was doing military exercises with the U.S. They certainly couldn't have been using anything, you know, new or interesting, which I'm sure they'll keep to themselves. But, you know, working with, you know, Vietnamese have always been anti-Chinese. You know, they fought several wars with them recently. But if it comes to a real conflict with the United States, then the Chinese, no question, will cut them in. If there's a shooting war between China and the U.S., Asians are gonna side with Asians. I really can't see the, you know, I can't see them unless there's a big financial deal that the U.S. is offering to Duterte. But the U.S. is in no position to do that. So this is bluster. I think it's an electoral bluster more than anything else. And I think he's well aware that where his loyalties lie. And he's said over and over again that, you know, China has it right in foreign affairs. And so as far as the Philippines is concerned, there's no doubt that the Chinese and Manila will come to an agreement as far as any oil wealth or anything like that.
So it's just rhetoric, really, then. You were saying there that China was actually working with the American military, and the American military disinvited them from their maneuvers. Now, I would have thought that one of the excuses for China working with America may have been those North Korea war games, they've just put a stop to those, haven't they? They've said that they're not going to continue with the practice invasions of North Korea. That's Donald Trump's olive branch to Kim Jong-un to denuclearize North Korea. So I would have thought that takes out this compulsion to actually work with America, because if they're not going on these war games against North Korea, what could there actually be for China to be working in tandem with America for? So, you know, I would have thought maybe that's a reason why China may not have actually wanted North Korea to have these talks with America, but they seem to actually be going along with it. Are they upset at all that they've been, you know, sort of sent away from the military games? Have they had anything to say about this, about not being invited, being disinvited from it, Matt?
The foreign ministry has said it's unfortunate, is the term that they used. I wonder, you know, following your train of thought, it may be possible that the Chinese were interested. I don't know to what extent the Chinese were involved in these games. I mean, clearly, you know, the U.S. has been threatening China on sea for 10 years. And I think really in terms of Duterte's concern, it was really the militarization of one of the islands that bothered him. I have the feeling that because he has an air base, the Chinese have an air base now, and I think a small naval base there now, that this is going to be a target for the Americans. It's possible that the Chinese were involved in these war games for the sake of seeing what the U.S. has and seeing strategy. Certainly was in their interest to go along with that. These games, although they were very large, they couldn't have been substantial because, you know, the Chinese aren't going to let the U.S. know what they have, what they're capable of, and vice versa. But as we're speaking now, Manila just signed a joint exploration agreement with China for oil, natural gas reserves in the South China Sea. So there's no question that what he's saying here is bluster. They're already working together. But I think Duterte's problem is that you militarize the islands, you bring more U.S. power and more trouble for me. I think that's really the concern, as well as the electoral bluster for, you know, the anti-Chinese sentiment, which is always very popular there. So I can imagine these RIMPAC game, the RIMPAC maneuvers, I'm not, they don't impress me because there's no way the Chinese are going to show the best of what they have to the U.S. at any time.
Well, America is in time-honored fashion has come up with a new word, a new term for trying to get the oil out of the South China Seas, and that is bringing freedom to the South China Seas. Speaking to reporters during a flight to Hawaii, James Mattis said the South China Sea was international waters, and a lot of nations wanted to see freedom of navigation maintained in the area. There's a very steady drumbeat of freedom of navigation operations. You'll notice there is only one country that seems to take active steps to rebuff them or state their resentment of them, he said. Well, it's normally the drums of war that you hear about. Has America rebranded that term to beating the drums of freedom? War games are now freedom of navigation operations. And on top of that, why has Pacific Command now been branded Indo-Pacific Command? Isn't that a blatant attempt to steal territory? Is this why China has said America's behavior is like a thief shouting, "Stop, thief"? Which I think is, that's pretty accurate, really, for America's behavior, isn't it? A thief shouting, "Stop, thief."
Absolutely. And what he said is correct. It's chutzpah, as we might want to say. But these exercises, it's only the second time that China has only been in these exercises one other time. So the concern is, that with the upcoming trade war and this kind of rhetoric back and forth, the Chinese, this wasn't a big deal for them. It's certainly the U.S. has been saying this for a long time. We're bringing freedom to people. It's strictly an economic matter. But one other thing I wanted to bring up in this respect is, the U.S. military condition. Now, I have a big paper. I've published on this before, but I have a much longer paper now on really the disaster that the U.S. military is. This year, I think you've had like 20 deaths of Americans in crashes. Two destroyers crashed into civilian fishing boats off the coast of Japan and Taiwan recently. Seems to be one disaster after another. And it wasn't that long ago, I think it was in April, that Mattis put a gag order on all military personnel talking about the readiness crisis. You may not speak to the press or anyone else about this. Now, since 2008, U.S. military has gotten something like $10 trillion. And yet at any given moment, the Navy F-18, the Hornet helicopter, about 60% of them are inoperable at any given moment. The fleet is aging beyond belief. They run out of spare parts. Military, about half the U.S. Air Force can't fly at any given time. They're massively short of pilots and maintenance people, skilled maintenance people. So, for the U.S. to threaten like this, with this massive budget, but apparently no real progress. And one of the things that the press has been saying recently, because the U.S. is involved in so many wars in so many countries in so many areas, that their naval aviation and air aviation is simply wearing out. And you don't have the trillions needed to repair them. and you have a massive manpower crisis. You have a massive financial crisis. And of course, you have the notion that the U.S., you know, is not a nation. It's just an oligarchy, self-interested oligarchy. So the U.S. is picking fights with Russia, not with China, who are allied anyway. Very few other countries except Japan is supporting the U.S. in this. And they're picking a fight that they can't win. And the U.S. military is an absolute disaster right now. Just this year alone, there's been a whole commission that the U.S. is a secret commission now to study why all these planes are falling out of the sky, helicopters and jets. And there's no doubt that the Chinese have noted that. And maybe one of the reasons that they've been emboldened to build an airbase on one of these islands. The Chinese don't have this problem. You know, they're spending, you know, they've rearmed. These are brand new. And that they're not all over the world like the U.S. is. And they actually have a nation. So the U.S. is struggling here. And of course, the first thing that Mattis said, in a press conference not too long ago, we don't have enough money. The Budget Control Act of 2016 is the worst enemy we have. Worse than China, worse than North Korea, he said. $6 trillion since 2008. That's a low estimate. You know, where's this money going? And, you know, the very fact that he had to put a gag order on military personnel talking about the crisis and the equipment malfunctions, everything that's going wrong. I think back in April, in one 72-hour period, 10 pilots were killed. One thing after another, after another, after another. And, you know, countries, you know, China's noticing this. It's an aging military. It's a overstretched military and apparently a very corrupt one because no one knows where this money goes.
Well, it's also a military that has its hands tied by affirmative action. China doesn't have any affirmative action-inspired incompetence like America does. I dare say that has a lot to do with these planes falling out of the sky. But I do like the idea that Americans can just trespass anywhere and then call it freedom of navigation operations. I'll have to remember that one myself. Well, let's have a look at what's actually going on with the Chinese. In May, the Chinese military landed nuclear-capable bombers on their artificial islands for the first time. Weeks earlier, US intelligence announced there was a high possibility Beijing had deployed anti-ship and anti-aircraft missiles as part of their military exercises. Though the United States' latest freedom of navigation operation was likely planned months in advance, experts said it was suggestive of the United States' attempts to pursue a harder line against China in the South China Sea. On Sunday, China's Defense Ministry spokesman Wu Qian labeled the return of U.S. warships a provocation which violated Chinese and international laws and blamed the U.S. military's exercises for the growing militarization of the region. And I think it's particularly interesting there, you know, this is the South China Sea, and China is being told you cannot put islands there, you cannot put your military there, while America is just steaming in there and deliberately provoking them and encouraging the militarization of the region. I mean, the Chinese are quite right here, I think. This is quite clearly a provocation. How can they call it freedom of navigation? It's the South China Sea. It's not the American Sea. The Americans don't own it. The Chinese own it. It's what they say goes. And yet America is just steaming in there and deliberately poking them with a stick and then complaining when the place gets militarized. What do you know about this, Matt, and these artificial islands that they've been putting there? Clearly, they've got a right to put these islands there. It's their sea. It's in the name. I think that's what they must mean by what our ancestors left to us. It's quite clearly Chinese property, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not an accident that they're called the South China Sea, not the Sea of Brooklyn or the Sea of Southern Florida or something like that. The Gulf of Mexico is close to Mexico. And that's not a coincidence either. This is classic imperialist behavior. You know, because Admiral Harris said this is an ideological fight, and I've seen in the U.S. Military the long-term Pentagon strategic plan that's been published. They publish it every year, but the 2017 makes the same comment, that if the U.S. fails, then darkness will descend over the world. And the darkness is a national socialism, nationalism. Eurasianism. And they make that very explicit, because what China's doing is challenging the American concept of the New World Order. This one world, completely commercialized, westernized liberal universe. And that's considered freedom. That's the definition of freedom here. And there's no doubt that they're connecting this. This is a very poor PR. It's been made into a million memes. There's oil somewhere. We have to go free it. So they have to make it seem like, the Chinese are these monstrous people. They're right in the Pentagon official doctrine. They're saying that this is going to be war, because when you start using terms like that, you start saying that this is about, universal right and wrong, which all of a sudden, they're not relativists anymore. All of a sudden they start using words like evil and things like this they never used before. But when it comes to the profits of big corporations, and the arrogance of people like Mattis and Harris, who really believe this kind of crap, anything goes. And they will say, they march right in there, where they don't belong, and then complain when China says anything. And you have a young power, a brand new superpower like China, massively growing population, very, very proud, military and everything else. Their patience is going to be minimal. And as the U.S. market becomes less and less responsive to Chinese goods, because, there is so much debt now, extending credit to any more Americans is very hard. It's not like it was even 10 years ago. And, without the U.S. market sucking up their goods all the time, the Chinese, they have less and less reason to be nice to the Americans. The U.S. had one thing going for them, and that was this market. Americans will spend money on anything. But as that starts to fall apart, the Chinese have no incentive to buy dollars. They have no incentive to be nice to the Americans. And I think they're aware that in any military confrontation, they're going to win. And they point out the anti-ship missiles, because what they're referring to is the brand new set of missiles that makes American aircraft carriers obsolete. One of them, they're called carrier busters anyway. The reason that these powers aren't buying aircraft, China has one, Russia has two. But they're falling out of favor because these missiles, one of them can sink one. They're not these floating castles like they used to be. And with long-range bombers and everything else, you really don't need them anymore. And so that's what they mean. That's why they single out these missile systems on the island. They're saying that the American superiority in naval hardware, which is certainly real, although not in the best of shape, is really irrelevant because of the new generation of Chinese anti-ship missiles. So the U.S. is worried, and this is what happens when you have a wounded animal that's in a corner.
And China's not interested in dancing to the drums of freedom. It's told America is not interested. I think one of the things we can say about China is that it does prove that diversity is not a strength. I mean, what you've got there, you've got a homogenous nation. A homogenous nation that isn't even white, that is now one of the counterpoints holding the balance of power, preventing America from taking over the rest of the world and having an American empire. And I would suggest that that's purely because it's an homogenous nation still. They are fiercely nationalistic. They have a week's holiday every year, which they call Chinese National Day or something like that. They call it the National Day, but it actually goes on for a week. And it's just all about Chinese supremacism. They don't have any guilt about being supremacist, thinking that China is the greatest nation in the world. And through having a homogenous nation, they've managed to take on America. They've managed to be able to just occupy Tibet, and nothing can be done about it. They refuse to allow people in there. They run a totalitarian system, and the rest of the world can't do anything at all about it because they've got so much power. I mean, they can go in there and attack these smaller countries, America can, but it can't do it to China. I think it's a real evidence to the world that diversity is not a strength. I'd like to find anywhere that actually proves this idea that multiculturalism works and it's actually an improvement anywhere, because wherever you look around the world, that just is not true. And China is a very good example of it, I think. Matt, thank you very much for coming on today. It's a lot of information there that I had no idea about before this podcast. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Florian Geyer. God bless and hail victory.